Well, hey, everyone. We are here for this week's culture segment, and I have someone to kind of introduce to you. Though, if you have followed our dating project curriculum at all, and you know that is now available on the Boundless site, you are going to know this person, not only by her resources, but just by who she is and the advice that she has to offer to us. It is Deborah Falada. Deborah, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to reconnect with you.
Well, super fun to have you here, that's for sure. Deborah is a professional counselor. She's a speaker and author. She has the book True Love Dates, Your Indispensable Guide to Finding the Love of Your Life, and has written not only for Boundless, but for Relevant Magazine, Crosswalk.com, and manages and writes for the True Love Dates blog. So she's married and has a few kids.
I like that.
So you're one of those people that, you know, we like, you know, finding folks like you and then just sucking the life out of them, because you not only have professional experience, but kind of you've dug in into relationships in your own life as well. And
yeah,
I even remember some of the great stories and anecdotes you share in our curriculum. And it's just always a privilege to when our paths can cross. So
yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of resources, you actually have a new one that is just out. It is called Choosing Marriage, Why It Has to Start with We is Greater Than Me. And
yes.
So this is one of those that you're probably like, okay, now I have some marriage under my belt, and maybe some of it worked out exactly how I thought it would, and some maybe didn't quite work out that way, and I've had to kind of navigate as we go along. But that's the way it should
be.
That's super great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
I think I had such an idealized view of marriage during my single years, and even during dating. I think sometimes our expectations of what marriage can look like are really off, because we have so many random things pouring into our view of marriage. And yeah, so it's been a process for me, and I hopefully can impart some encouragement and some perspective through this new project.
Yeah. Well, I want you to start out by talking to us about a bologna sandwich, because it kind of gives insight not only into your husband and kind of some of his character traits, because I know you even described yourself as being a little bit rose-colored glasses on the front end.
Right.
But realizing really through a bologna sandwich and some of the sacrifices he was making, that it kind of poured into what you saw as making a good marriage. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, I start out the first line in Choosing Marriage with, did you ever think someone could show you love through a bologna sandwich? And for me, a bologna sandwich seems like such a silly thing. But when you backtrack to that place in our relationship, my husband was a med student. He was completely broke. And the only way he could save up money to get an engagement ring was by eating bologna sandwiches for months. And needless to say, he currently hates bologna sandwiches. But it's the idea that relationships have to start with sacrifice in some way, shape, or form. And just seeing the evidence of that sacrifice during our time of dating and engagement is just such a reminder to me of what a relationship has to be rooted in order for it to succeed.
Okay, I want you to also tell us a little bit about, you know, I know your journey into marriage kind of had a bunch of quirky moments. And, you know, I think it could be very easy for people to say, you know, okay, well, you know, clearly Deborah just talked about her husband being in med school. She obviously became a counselor. They were on this fast track to just the white picket fence and whatever. But you actually said, you know, there were probably a few misperceptions that you had going into marriage. Tell us a little bit about some of the things you really took away from premarital counseling, even to the point of the wedding day, ways that you were able to kind of reframe the whole process of looking ahead to marriage.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that so many of us don't actually have a healthy understanding or perspective of what marriage is going to look like. And I don't really blame us as human beings and individuals and people in the church, because we don't have the opportunity to get a front row look into marriage, and we don't really know what we're expecting. We don't really get trained for it. And one thing that I've kind of been thinking about recently, and sort of foundational to the concepts in this book, is the idea that we get training and preparation for for so many other things in life. For example, like you mentioned with med school, it's like 20,000 hours of training to get a license. And even a driver's license, you have like 100 hours of training. But with marriage, I mean, you walk in, they give you the license and basically say, good luck with that, you know? Mm-hmm. So here I am, a newlywed with not much training outside of, thankfully, my clinical training that I had just started as a counselor, and having to navigate now the differences in our personality types. John is so laid back. I'm so, like, you know, type A, like to get things done, scheduled, and things like that. The differences in your personality, the differences in how you were raised, the differences in your lifestyle, your approach to life. Even if you have two healthy people, all those differences, all those perspectives start coming out. And it's like a pressure cooker. And now you've got to deal with all the quirks, all the issues, and try to navigate it in a way that brings you closer rather than in a way that brings conflict and keeps you apart from each other.
Yeah. Would you say there are things between you and John that probably you didn't see or didn't notice either right up to the wedding or things that had to be brought to your attention? How did you kind of reconcile those as things we can work through rather than, oh, my goodness, are these going to be insurmountable?
Yeah. Well, you know, right off the get-go, I think the things that you see in dating, you may observe them. And sometimes they're even good things. They're just differences. For example, like I mentioned, John's really laid back. I'm kind of uptight about things, and you know, I don't like to waste time. I'm like, go, go, go. In premarital counseling, they said, he is the brakes, and I'm the gas. And brakes and gas kind of work together. But at times, they can also really bother each other and annoy each other and cause conflict. So little things would happen in our relationship where he'd be so laid back about it. You know, it'll get done when it gets done, for example. You know, if we need to do something where I'm like, if we don't get it done, it's not going to get done. And all of a sudden, these things that you thought were so great in the beginning, like, oh, he's so laid back, how wonderful. Now all of a sudden, it's like, he is so laid back, I'm going to kill him, you know? And learning how to take those things and learn from them and allow each other, you kind of rub off on each other in marriage, and in a good way, because the differences in your personality can work against you, or you can say, you know what, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to become more laid back. And he says, you know, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to learn how to be more efficient in my day or be more scheduled and productive. So you can take those things, those normal things that come up in every relationship, and they can really cause major issues, or you can learn to adapt and become more like each other, kind of meet in the middle and have a balanced approach to your life and your relationships. Cool. You definitely have to learn this along the way.
Yeah. Well, it's sad because I think so many folks have taken in the lie that the culture has told us that a good marriage is entirely up to luck, that, you know, either you're going to pick the right person or you're not, or you're going to have good circumstances or you're not, or it's just going to be chemistry or it's not. And, you know, kind of sign the marriage certificate, have the wedding, and then good luck because your chances of making it the distance are just not that good.
Right. Yeah.
But I would say you'd probably argue that there are actually indicators and things that you can pour into both in the dating process and in early marriage that are going to up your chances of success. And just talk to us about a couple of what you would recommend those as being things to look out for and things to actually aggressively cultivate in your own life and in the relationship.
Yeah, for sure. I always say that healthy relationships aren't found, they're created. And it's not just something you happen upon and, you know, oh, look, this is great. It doesn't work out like that. You've got to know what you're looking for. You've got to understand that there may be differences in things like personality and lifestyle. There's some things that you just cannot settle for in a relationship. And part of learning how to attract a healthy relationship comes down to becoming healthy yourself, because the healthier you are, the healthier the type of relationships you tend to attract. So the more you work on yourself with regards to having healthy expectations, navigating conflict, understanding your communication style, understanding your personality bent, understanding your past, your family of origin, how that's influenced you, understanding the walls that you bring into marriage, understanding your view of sex and sexuality and how those things play out in a relationship. The more you know about yourself, the healthier you get, the healthier the relationships you're going to be drawn to and the relationships that are going to be attracted to you as well. And so I think if you're single, you're listening to this, there's two important things here. Number one is getting a healthy view of marriage, surrounding yourself by people who are doing marriage well so that you can get a front row seat into what that looks like. And sometimes you don't get invited into people's marriage. Sometimes you have to invite yourself and say, you know what, I'm looking for someone to mentor me. I love your relationship. I'd love to kind of learn from you. And it's also important to find resources from books like this to classes to courses, because you've got to see marriage as, you know, this thing you've got to prepare for. It's not just something that happens by mistake. Good marriages have to be deliberate, something you prepare for, something you work towards, even before you're married. And secondly, you've got to work on yourself while standing alone, because the healthier you are now, the healthier your relationships are going to be in the future. And the work you're doing now for yourself is never going to be in vain. Whether or not you get married isn't the point. The point is you get healthier along the way and have a more fulfilling and rich life because you're healthier.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's assumed, especially in Christian circles and stuff, we hear a lot about this idea of selflessness and how obviously the crucible of sacrificial love is something in which good marriages grow. But I love how in the book you talk about the difference between that, approaching it in a healthy, God-centered way that really puts others before yourself. You want to be sure not to confuse it with just general conflict avoidance or passivity.
Right.
Talk to us about the difference between those.
Yeah, because, you know, when I start this book with such a heavy emphasis on sacrifice and the idea that we is greater than me, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't misleading anyone, because a lot of people use that as a guise for unhealthy relationships, or they're in a relationship that's one-sided, where they're doing all the work, or they're giving, and getting nothing in return, and there's no boundaries and no balance. So I thought it was really important, you know, in a section to remind people that there is a difference between being selfless and being passive. They're completely different things. Selflessness doesn't mean that you don't say what you need in a relationship. You know, it doesn't mean you just sit around and hope the other person can read your mind. You've got to voice your needs. Selflessness doesn't mean that you keep your hurts to yourself. You've got to get good at recognizing what you need and what's hurting you and being able to communicate that. Selflessness doesn't mean that you always say yes either. You've got to learn that saying no is a healthy part of life, and everything you say yes to, you're automatically saying no to something else. So you've got to be really careful with your yeses and learn how to set boundaries for yourself. Yeah, I think it is really important, especially as Christians, for us to learn that selflessness doesn't just mean that we have no personality, no voice, no opinions in a relationship. And there's a really important balance with the boundaries that we set in order to have a healthy marriage.
Yeah. Well, and one other thing I want you to address, too, because I think this is almost the like another prong of this concept, is in focusing and in prioritizing the we, as you do in your book, what is the place in that for other relationships? Because I think we would say that is also healthy. We shouldn't just be gazing into one another's eyes and expecting all our needs to be met in this other person. So how do you emphasize the we and realize you are now one flesh, and, you know, to honor God in that, but also fit in time for friends and family and kind of, you know, the other relationships that are necessary for health?
Yeah. You know, a healthy marriage really consists of two people who are feeling full themselves. They're not in it to get full. They're not in it to suck the life out of this person so that they can make themselves feel good. Two people who are both full, two people who are sitting under God's love, two people who feel complete in their identity and in God's love for them and their understanding of that. And when you've got two full people who are overflowing in each other's lives, the key word is overflow. You've got so much overflow, and you've got more to give than just what you've got in this relationship. And so I think when we're understanding God's love and allowing it to pour into us and allowing that love to be the catalyst of how we love our spouse, we we find that we live in the overflow. And in that overflow, we've got a responsibility as married people. The responsibility is to allow that overflow to continue flowing into the lives of the people that God has placed in our life, from our children to our extended family, to our friends, to our separate ministries. I mean, I think it starts there. You know, I kind of visualize this water fountain, Lisa, and God's at the top, pouring out love, and then the marriage is next, and it's the cup, and it gets full, but then it overflows into the people around us. And I just think that's the best approach we can have when it comes to marriage, because if you don't see it like that, like you said, it's not just about staring in each other's eyes and hogging that love to yourself. It's a love with a purpose, and the purpose is showing love to other people in this world, showing an example of what Christ love looks like.
That's good. I know, you know, we're running out of time, but one other thing that you touch on in the book that I think is really valuable is this idea of authenticity leading into marriage and in marriage. And what about, like, that person, whether there's a fear around, well, I don't know if this person could handle this about me, or I don't know. Just give some advice to the person who maybe is hiding something they know is wrong, or they're fearful that who they are is not enough. How can they just start, you know, really on a bedrock of honesty in light of this relationship, to know whether or not it has the strength to move forward?
Yeah. In this section, I talk about, you know, the importance of moving from facade to authenticity, because the more we can be real with one another, the more intimate our relationships are. And truly, confession is what leads to that deep intimacy. So I really encourage couples to confess to one another, like Scripture says, confess to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. And then we kind of backtrack, because not everybody who's reading Choosing Marriage is married. In fact, I wrote Choosing Marriage with singles in mind because I wanted to give them a front row seat of what it looks like to have a healthy relationship and a healthy marriage. But the idea is, you've got to get good at confessing. You've got to get good with identifying the struggles and the sins in your life that are holding you back and bring them to the light. And if you don't have a spouse, if you don't have that built-in accountability partner, you've got to surround yourself with people that you trust that can speak life into you and start the process of bringing those things to the light so they can be healed, and taking inventory of what it is you actually need to work on, and learning to live authentically with the people that God has placed around you here and now, learning to let people in. That's something that isn't easy for us to do, especially in this world, this day and age, Lisa. We're all about painting our Pinterest perfect lives, you know, like the things we put on social media. We want the world to see us in our glory. And I think sometimes we start believing that to be true, and we forget that we really are human beings with struggles and weaknesses and issues. And what does it look like to bring those to the light, to confess to one another, to receive healing so that we can have greater intimacy in our relationship?
That's good. A great springboard on a number of fronts for folks, exactly as you said, who may not be at marriage yet, but what better place to prepare for marriage than before you're in it. And so,
yeah,
absolutely. Well, folks, we've been talking to Deborah Falada. Again, the book is Choosing Marriage, Why It Has to Start with We Is Greater Than Me. And we have that available on our site. You can also find out more about Deborah at truelovedates.com. And hop over to the blog and comment. Let us know what you think. In what ways are you working towards authenticity, towards selflessness? What does it look like for you? How are you building up a community around you? Also, I want to give you guys a shout out again about our Focus on the Family and Boundless Counseling Department. If you call us at 1-800, the letter A and the word family, we would love to just help you get the process started on working through some of this stuff that maybe you think it's time to start, even today, addressing in your own life, so that you are prepared not only as a single and as a healthy Christian, but also in preparation for dating and marriage and family. So you can go to boundless.org, search 549. That's the number of this show, and we will get you connected and on the way there. Deborah, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you, Lisa. It's so great to chat with you.